Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during Red, White, and Blue Savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Mark Hagen-Ampake-Pagan, and joining me today, author, historian, and screenwriter Alex von Tunzelman, who is here to talk about history in film, when it's accurate, when it's not, and which is actually preferable.
Hello, my name is Alex von Tunzelman. I'm a historian and screenwriter.
Your book, Real History, The World According to the Movies, it's this wonderful read. You split up the movies into various categories, and then you talk about, I guess, their entertainment value versus their historical value. Before we get into some of the specifics and geek out about these movies and the historical value, I was wondering if you could tell me just where the idea came about and what inspired you to sit down and go, this is something that needs doing.
Well, it kind of came up several years ago with originally Real History was a column in the Guardian newspaper in the UK, and came up with the editor of that of the paper wanted to do a kind of historical movie column, you know, because we felt like, I mean, and when she talked about it to me, I kind of jumped on it, and both of us had felt like, you know, there's, when the movies come out that are historical, and they often do, particularly around Oscar season, you tend to see a whole load of them come out. You know, they get reviewed by film critics, and that's great. That's really interesting. That's their perspective. But of course, people often have questions about, well, how much of the history is really accurate in these movies? And, you know, film critics who do their job amazingly don't necessarily know the history behind it. So the idea was just to give like a different perspective. And I've always been a massive movie fan, so I was really excited about the opportunity to do that.
And also, I think good film critics, they often don't necessarily care about the real history because they're judging it purely as a piece of cinema.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, that's absolutely fine. I mean, that's what their job is. And of course, a lot of people don't mind about the history at all. Like, I sometimes have people come back to me on Twitter and so on and say, you know, but it doesn't matter. I only watch films to enjoy them. And I say, that's great. That's fine. You're welcome to do that. No problem at all. But of course, other people do want to know more about it. And that's kind of who the column's for.
And I have those moments as well myself where I'm watching a piece of history on cinema and I have this debate in my mind whether I should care about how accurate it is. Because, simply because, more often than not, when you watch Selma or you watch Gandhi, that's going to be the predominant idea of that moment or that individual because it's just, I mean, it hits everyone everywhere across the world.
It does, and it really gets into people's heads. I mean, this is something that I kind of found out when I started to write the column and, you know, saw people's responses and so on, is I think I kind of hadn't realized before I started to work on this subject just how much movies do affect actually how we see historical figures, particularly figures. I mean, as you mentioned, people like Martin Luther King in Selma or Gandhi in the Ben Kingsley movie Gandhi. And, you know, I think it's funny how, it particularly with very good movies, which, you know, both of those are good movies, it can be very, very effective, and it really gets into people's heads and kind of sets a certain image of a historical character, which then you find it coming back to you as a historian. And I wrote my first book about the partition of India and Pakistan and a lot about Gandhi. And I can tell you that an awful lot of people in this world seem to have an opinion of Gandhi that comes a lot more from the movie than from actually what happened, which, of course, is somewhat different from what happens in the movie.
Oh, and there's an inordinate amount of influence even on the characters and the actors who play them. I remember I watched Gandhi for the first time, and I remember certain family members of mine were quite offended afterwards by the fact that Ben Kingsley went on to star in Harem. And they were like, oh, no, but he played Gandhi. I mean, wow. Look at this movie harem. It's awful. What's going on? And that's, I mean, that just shows you how much of an impact that film has.
Well, I mean, absolutely. And I mean, you know, there's a famous story actually about when that movie was being made. There were a lot of discussions about who should play Gandhi. And some people felt in the Indian government that really it was, you know, quite sacrilegious even for someone to play him on screen. Apparently during discussion, somebody came up with the idea that he, you know, shouldn't be portrayed at all by an actor. And in fact, instead, they should just have a kind of ball of light playing him, at which point apparently the director, Richard Attenborough, then said, I'm not making a movie about flipping Tinkerbell. So that idea went in the bin. In fact, I'm afraid Richard Attenborough used a rather ruder word than flipping, but I'll save your readers' ears.
Oh, fantastic. What role then does cinema play in portraying history? I mean, it was 2 years ago. There was that big debate about Selma in particular and the portrayal of LBJ. And the LBJ fans were quite upset because the movie made him look like this almost uninterested participant in the civil rights movement.
Right. I mean, I found the Selma controversy really interesting for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, actually, that movie is pretty historically accurate.
You give it a very high rating in the book.
Yeah, I think the portrayal of LBJ is actually pretty fair. It's very close to, you know, the things people were objecting to were actually very close to some historical accounts. For instance, if you actually read, you know, the collection of writings that's published as the autobiography of Martin Luther King, it's actually very close to the accounts in the movie that people were disputing. And you think, well, in fact, surely the writing of Dr. King would be a pretty good historical source. So why are these people so upset? And it seemed that there was a very strong reaction to what I actually felt was a pretty fair portrayal, which I think perhaps tells you something about politics in the US today, the fact that people got so kind of het up about that rather than necessarily their historical opinions. But also what happened with that movie, I mean, what seems to happen now every year with the Oscars is it's now become such a kind of hot competition. And it's always, I mean, historical movies are always, you know, a big proportion of the movies that are up for Oscars, that actually... apparently rival studios actually employ historians and columnists to kind of undermine their rival movies. And so
no
you get
way.
Them kind of trashed in the press. Yeah. I mean, amazingly, this does actually happen. I mean, I've got to say, as a historian, if the studio wants to pay me to do that, hey, those guys have big bucks. Awesome. Let me know. But no, it's apparently it's a regular thing now. And I feel like that movie was really, you know, actually done quite a disservice because a lot of very negative pieces came out on it. And it's actually pretty fair. I think it's a great movie.
Well, I find Selma particularly fascinating because I remember reading about, at the time when it came out, I remember reading about how Steven Spielberg owns the rights to all his speeches. So everything we hear in Selma is made up to sound like Martin Luther King.
That's right. And I mean, I think it's a real triumph, actually, of screenwriting. That you can't really tell when you watch it. That I mean, it's a brilliant performance as well by David Oyelowo in the title role, not title role, in Martin Luther King, the lead role. But yeah, I mean, it's incredible. It's so well written that it doesn't strike you that you're missing the real line. But yeah, I mean, the Martin Luther King's estate are extremely protective of their copyright. So yeah, they couldn't use any original words at all.
Yet again, with Selma and something like Martin Luther King and a biopic about MLK, it blew my mind that they hadn't made one for the big screen ever before that point.
Right. I mean, well, you know, possibly because of the difficulties of making it with the estate and the copyright. I mean, sometimes that sort of thing does get in the way. You know, and I mean, one of the reasons, I mean, Spielberg owns the, as I understand, still has the kind of rights to Martin Luther King's story, you know, and obviously he'd been trying to make a movie at various points. And, you know, I think it can be very, very difficult to get these things off the ground and to get them together. So sometimes, yeah, it comes out and you think, well, why hasn't this been done before? And, you know, partly it's just because it's very hard to get movies made a lot of the time.
And also in 2017, I think nobody wants to see that traditional biopic, that birth to death biopic anymore. They want something slightly more skewed. They want something which plays around with time a little bit.
I think that's often very true. Yeah. I mean, there's been a kind of change in the style of biopics. And I think it was very visible when the Mandela one came out a couple of years ago. With Idris Elba. And actually, it's a pretty good movie, The Mandela Movie. It's not bad at all. Idris Elba's fantastic in the role. But it felt like a kind of old-fashioned movie. You know, it was a very long kind of epic sweep. Like you say, the kind of sense of birth to death in it and all of that, well, that wasn't quite. But, you know, it felt like a very, very, and it, like a lot of stuff was going in this movie. And actually, it was much more of a fashion now, I think, for these kind of, like a glimpse of a life, not trying to cover the whole thing in some comprehensive way. But, you know, actually going in much closer. So, I mean, something like Selma does that. And actually, of course, the great example of that is Lawrence of Arabia, which is a classic movie, but really only covers a very short portion of T. Lawrence's life.
And, of course, the latest Lincoln adaptation by Steven Spielberg as well, I think, was quite he made a lot of interesting decisions in that film. Right from the very beginning, I love the fact that it was two soldiers who were reciting his speech back to him, as opposed to Lincoln delivering that speech. And I thought that was quite an inspired moment.
It was a lovely, clever way to do that in an unexpected way. And I thought Lincoln, I really enjoyed it. It felt to me like a kind of 19th century West Wing, which definitely
absolutely
made me happy as a West Wing geek. But, you know, I felt that movie suffered a little, actually, from the absence of Frederick Douglass. And I think early on, I understand that in earlier drafts of the script and earlier versions of, you know, kind of ideas for that movie, it was going to be much more of a two-hander between Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. And personally, I feel a little sad that movie wasn't made.
Let's bring things back to your part of the world in the UK and, you know, movies like Diana and The Queen and biopics, because I'm such a sucker for historical films about the royal family. Don't ask me why. When I was a kid in the 80s growing up, there was that awful, awful production of the wooing and wedding of Charles and Diana. Do you remember that?
With, oh my goodness, what, you mean a dramatization?
Yes, with, is it Catherine Oxenberg?
Oh, right. Yeah.
It was a telly movie.
And right.
I think my family were just huge Diana fans and we had it on tape. And I want to watch it again because I have seemingly fond memories about it, but I'm not sure if it's going to hold up.
Probably not.
Well, in your book, you give the Queen an incredibly high rating, but
yeah,
not so
I mean,
much with Diana.
No. I mean, they're very different movies, those. One of them's quite a lot more intelligent than the other.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I think The Queen is actually a really good movie. And I was surprised because I have to say, you know, and maybe this is because I've grown up in the UK, so I'm overexposed to it. But, like, I know so many people love stuff about the royal family, but personally, I have a pretty low tolerance for it. You know, all of that stuff, the stories are so familiar to me. And, you know, I mean, I actually, earlier in my career, I even researched a book that somebody else was writing. I was a researcher on a book about the royal family. So I read so much about it. And it feels to me like such well-trodden territory that it's pretty hard to make me interested in hearing it again. And I think what the Queen did brilliantly was actually, again, do a kind of very small slice of a life and a very different spin on it. And actually, it's not just a movie about the Queen anyway. It's also about, you know, the other people involved in that situation, about Tony Blair and about these other, you know, it's actually a kind of smarter movie about the response to this tragedy that happened. And I thought that was really clever. The Diana movie, yeah, not so great. I think I gave it a fail for entertainment.
You did.
Yeah. It is extraordinarily cheesy. And you know, it stars Naomi Watts, who I think is a fantastic actress. And the movie is just such a mess. Again, it's one of those ones that feels like it just kind of goes on for far too long, covers far too much territory. And again, it's by a brilliant director as well. It's by, you know, Oliver Hirschbiegel, who directed Downfall, which is a completely brilliant movie. So, you know, sometimes things just go wrong. What can you say?
So in all of your work looking at movies and history, is there some sort of, or have you come across some sort of correlation between entertainment value and historical accuracy? Or is it just luck of the draw? Because there are some movies which are terrible, with terrible historical value, but great entertainment value, and vice versa, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely, there are. I mean, I don't really think there is much of a correlation, to be perfectly honest. I think you could name, you know, there's every permutation is possible. You can have a movie that, you know, that I would give like a double A grade to. It's fantastically entertaining and really accurate. You can have ones that are terrible on both scores. Diana is one of them. You can have movies that are, as you say, kind of historically terrible, but wildly entertaining. And personally, I really enjoy those. Those are kind of my favorites at some level because, you know, I'm watching them enjoying how badly they're messing up the history. And you can also have ones, and it's kind of talked about less, but I mean, you know, I've seen several that are highly accurate, but actually really boring. And in a way, that's kind of a pretty serious crime as well, because once you've bored people, you really are in trouble. So sometimes it doesn't do to be too slavish and accurate about the history.
What does cinema do for your occupation? Does it make your life harder or easier? Are you the person at parties that is constantly shouting people down with false information? Because I would be that person.
Well, sometimes. I mean, the thing is, I'm kind of, you know, I'm on both sides of this fence, really, because, you know, I started my career as a historian and did all of that, and now I'm screenwriting myself. So I'm kind of, you know, I'm a bad guy and the good guy at once, you know, the cop and the robber. So I kind of, you know, I suppose I hope I have a kind of complicated view of it, not too simplistic. But I do find that, yeah, I mean, I suppose what I find annoying is kind of is the way that actually sometimes, you know, movies are so persuasive. It's such an incredibly effective genre or effective form of art that you do find. I mean, obviously, people know this. This is why, you know, politicians, even, you know, democratic ones, dictators, everything, often pour a lot of money into making propaganda movies. The reason they do that is that movies work. They really convince you of their story. You know, there's something about them that just does work. And so you do find that, you know, people actually kind of have ideas about history which are completely formulated on the movies. And at the moment, this is coming up a lot on Twitter, I'm noticing, because, you know, with all the protests in the US and so on, I keep seeing people saying, well, you know, you should be like Gandhi, you should be a peaceful protester, and that's how he won Indian independence. And I keep having to say to people, no, he didn't. That's not what happened at all. And the fact you think that is probably coming from the movie, not from any book you've read, because that isn't what happened.
Have you seen Hidden Figures yet?
I have, yeah.
And what did you think? I mean, I just read the book and I spoke to Margot Shetterly, and the book's absolutely magnificent. And I loved the movie as well. But after reading the book, I realized that even the film, because it's cinema, had to conflate people and time.
It does. And I mean, I think pretty much every film has to do that. I don't go too harsh on doing that because, you know, if you're trying to tell a complicated story in, you know, ideally 90 minutes, might get 2 hours if you're lucky. You know, you have to compress things. I mean, a film is kind of a short story. It's not really a novel. So you have to kind of often simplify events. You have to, I mean, Hidden Figures does a little bit of moving around the timelines, you know, and all of that. And obviously it has to pick kind of three women to focus on, whereas actually, of course, there are more people than that, you know, doing these amazing things. But again, you can't make a movie with, you know, 100 stars, and you can't make a movie that lasts for 16 hours because nobody will see it. So, you know, so I think they did actually a pretty good job of that. And I don't think it's so bad to do that. You know, there's a little bit of, you know, making real life fit into a three-act structure. You pretty much have to cut a few corners off. But I thought they were very true to the essence of the story. And I loved it. I thought it was a brilliant movie.
But I will say this, though. I will say this. It has somewhat changed my perspective on Apollo 13 and even The Right Stuff, if only because for the longest time in my head, I would justify those movies as only featuring white men because I was always like, well, you know, white men was all there was at the time. But of course, there wasn't.
I think that's really true. And unfortunately, of course, that's the case with a lot of history. You know, there are people who get left out of these stories. And, you know, you find this kind of in all sorts of ways. I mean, I'm thinking of there's a kind of pretty extraordinarily bad biopic of the artist Michelangelo starring Charlton Heston, kind of made, you know, back in the day.
I have seen that movie.
Have you seen it? It's so bad.
It
is awful. It's called The Agony and the Ecstasy. It's so bad. But in that movie, I mean, Michelangelo, really famous. And if you look at his art, you know, he's a gay man. He was obviously a gay man. But, you know, they can't show that, of course, in Hollywood, in the kind of, you know, in the silver age of Hollywood. So they have to show him kind of having, you know, this passionate affair with a woman and all of this stuff. And it's just garbage. And you couldn't, I mean, now you would just get laughed at so hard if you tried to make that movie in Hollywood. But, you know, I think hopefully things have been changing for the better. I mean, I think Hidden Figures is a fantastic sign that actually, you know, you can, you know, now you can hopefully make movies about, you know, some of these people who've been left out. And also it's been a huge box office hit, which in fact people weren't really expecting.
No, they weren't. I mean, that was my first question for Margot. I basically went, Margot, what did it feel like to wake up on January the 9th and discover that your movie overtook Rogue One?
Wow, yeah. I mean, that's a really big deal.
Right?
What did she say?
she was speechless. And she said exactly that. She said it was a huge deal. And, you know, they both set in essentially space and galaxies far, far away. Only one is real.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, amazing. And I think that's what I really hope. And I've got to say to people, you know, if you want to see more movies like that, then for goodness sake, go and see it in the cinema. You know, don't pirate it. Go and see it, because you have to kind of vote with your, you know, with your dollars or your pounds or your whatever currency, because they will make more if they get that kind of response. You know, what certainly unfortunately happened in the past sometimes is that if, you know, there's a kind of tendency that if a movie fails and it's, you know, led by, say, you know, the leading actor is black, that he will get blamed for that or she'll get blamed for that. Whereas if a movie fails with a white actor in the lead, you know, the film gets blamed. So there's, you know, that's been a really annoying situation. But I think things are changing. But we definitely have to support movies that are doing something different.
I think so, too. I think things are going in the right direction. So one last thing. The Imitation Game. You were incredibly harsh on The Imitation Game. And your book enlightened me in a sense that that movie just didn't sit right with me. And I couldn't put my finger on why. For the longest time, everyone else was raving about it. And I was like, I don't know. I just didn't like it until I read your book. And then I was like, oh, yeah, that's probably it.
That's so great. So, what, yeah, you didn't.
So
really...
if you could tell my listeners why you failed The Imitation Game.
Wow. Now, The Imitation Game to me was exactly the example of a movie that kind of does all the wrong things historically. And I mean, particularly what it does is, so I mean, Alan Turing, you know, is this amazing kind of pioneer of computing who is seen as really as kind of one of Britain's great war heroes now. That's been something where he's really been brought back, you know, having been forgotten about for some years. He's now kind of, you know, considered to be a really important figure. And I mean, that's great and really exciting. And he was a gay man, and that also, unfortunately, in previous movies about him, that got changed too. And, you know, that was, and now I think, you know, we've kind of hopefully moved on a little bit as a society. And so it was exciting to have a new movie being made about him. But the thing they did, which was really extraordinary, was they obviously decided that this movie was not exciting enough at some stage. And so they decided to mix in the story of the Cambridge spies. Now, where Alan Turing is thought of as one of Britain's greatest war heroes, the Cambridge spies are like Britain's ultimate villains. So these are a group of, you know, British guys who basically started working for the Soviet Union and, you know, feeding information back to the Soviet Union at that time. And, you know, they became kind of very famous traitors, and it became a huge case and all of this stuff. And let's be clear, okay, the Cambridge spies never met Alan Turing. They definitely didn't. You can prove it. There's no overlap at all. There's no involvement between those two stories. But what this movie did was imply that those two stories were absolutely intertwined, that Turing was involved with them, that he got blackmailed by John Cairncross, one of them, that he considered getting into the blackmail. And I was watching this just kind of with my jaw on the floor, kind of thinking, like, do you realize what you've done here? You know, I don't even know if they realized that they had actually basically accused one of Britain's greatest heroes of, you know, being tempted to commit treason. And I thought, actually, that's really slanderous. That's a terrible thing to say about somebody. And it definitely didn't happen. So I found that pretty extraordinary. And I can tell you from experience, but I bet you now, like, they have, so Bletchley Park, the kind of center where all this amazing kind of, you know, breaking of the code machines was done, is now open to the public. And I will bet you there are now going to be generations of school kids turning up to see that, saying, so where's the bit about the spies? And everyone at Bletchley Park will have to spend days and days explaining that this never actually happened. And they won't be believed, because now, again, and the problem partially is that the movie is, you know, it is well made and it's well acted and, you know, it looks...
And it got all those Oscar nominations.
Got all those Oscar nominations. And so people find it even more believable. You know, it's actually the more... it's kind of the better a movie is in terms of filmmaking, the more damaging it can really be historically.
Alex, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
No, at all. It's a great pleasure.
That was author, historian, and screenwriter Alex von Tunzelmann. If you're a fan of the movies and curious about how they intersect with the real world, then I strongly urge you to get her book, Real History, The World According to Movies. It is an incredibly fun read. You've been listening to At the Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now's the time to find your color, your paint, and everything to get started during red, white, and blue savings at the Home Depot. Transforming your room is easier than ever. With the best deals online and in-store, you can confidently select your color and the tools for your next paint project. Get a colorful new experience and the right paint for the right price. Save $10 on 1 gallon and $40 off 3 and 5 gallons for a limited time only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. Limit 25 gallons per household. See store for details.